Hello and welcome to Path to Power, episode 13. I'm Matt Cooper.
And I'm Ivan Yates.
Now, we had planned for today's programme to use the many emails that you sent in to our new email address. That is mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com. But then something happened on Wednesday, something a little bit unexpected. Leo Varadkar quit. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about Simon Harris as replacement. So you had no wind of it, Ivan. You're not going to try and tell me you had some wind of this. Nobody had any wind of it.
Other than Brian Murphy, his closest advisor, there was no wind of it. In fact, someone was telling me in the Dáil Bar on Wednesday night, there were six of his full-time staff, all political appointees who are now out of a job, and they had no proper wind of this. The Taoiseach and party leaders had no wind of this. They had their usual meeting on Tuesday night, and at the end of it, he called Micheál aside and he said, I have something to say. And the first most senior cabinet members knew about it was at the end of the cabinet meeting. And you know
on
what?
On Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
So this is as normal in the leaders' meeting on Tuesday. And then surely it was the most important item on the agenda, not any other business.
Well, put it like this. Whatever we're going to talk about Leo's legacy and his high good strengths and weaknesses and so on, and the contrast with Harris and so on. But the general feeling amongst people in the government apparatus and so on, fury. How self-indulgent and flaky was this? I mean, you know yourself. There's so many nuances. I could do an interview with you in January and say, you know, actually, I'm reflecting on the situation. There's times I get tired. And not say I'm announcing, but you could set the mood music. You could say at the count of the referendum, I'm going to reflect over the weekend and when I'm in Washington on what this means for my leadership or whatever.
Sorry, when you say that, aren't you effectively resigning there and then?
And there's a million ways you can say it without saying it. No, in other words, you can open the door. There was no prior thing. He was Mr. Resilient and so on. And to be honest with you, that there's so many jobs and it's so important. In opposition, this would be fine. In government, it is actually, it's actually a bit flaky. And it actually was a disaster for him because everyone said, sorry, you didn't say any of this before or give us any inkling. What happened in the 7 days between the count and Washington that you changed your mind? Was there some story, nefarious story?
Denying that.
Yeah, no, sorry, no, I accept that. But what I'm saying is the way he did it brought all that about.
Okay, you texted me almost immediately and used the word selfish in his actions. And I had actually already written a piece which we put up on the Business Post website immediately saying that it was an act of political selflessness. Right? The very opposite of selfish. Now, thinking about that afterwards and reflecting on it, I was thinking maybe there's a bit of both in that it was personally selfish, but actually, in some respects, it was selfless in that far too many politicians hang on in positions of power for too long. And they do so for reasons of their ego, often because they think, well, nobody else can do it as well as I can do it. If I'm not here, the whole thing will fall apart. So the fact that he actually, if he genuinely felt that he wasn't the best person for the job, and if he also realised, and I think we've been very much saying this on previous editions of this podcast, that Fine Gael was heading into electoral meltdown in both the local and European elections and then in the general election, that he actually did the right thing by Fine Gael, even if it was for selfish reasons, by stepping back.
But sorry, the right time to do that was November or Christmas. In other words, we are actually 8 weeks from polling day today. You know what I mean? That we're the selection conventions, directors of elections, budgets, campaigns are all in place. Like there's 959 local councillors to be elected. There's a lot of people,
and they have a better chance now that they have a different leader instead of Varadkar, perhaps.
If that's the fundamental point, that he was a busted flush as the face on the poster, and that he was an electoral liability, if that just sounds absolutely fine, the timing was just appalling.
Well, again, I'm not sure it was appalling, because if they knew, and there have been suggestions that private polling had been presented to him in recent days showing that they faced an absolute meltdown on the back, particularly of the referendum results. And then there were pieces appearing, and I had Sarah Carey on the radio with me during the week because of the piece she did in the Irish Independent saying that Fine Gael had left her. And I think there possibly, you would know this much better than me, but you must feel that there are a lot of Fine Gael people who felt that the party under Leo Varadkar no longer stood for what they believed were Fine Gael values.
Well, that is absolutely true. I happened to have a paid gig on Wednesday night. I was shocked. So what I was doing was emceeing Rosa Tralee style. So I'd come out of Dublin, filled in for Pat Kenny for 2 days, and the story broke. And Chris Donahue sent me a text earlier that morning. I don't think you should leave the studio today. Something's going to happen. And I couldn't think what it was. And then, you know, Finnan broke the story and one thing led to another. So I hung around on air till about 12:30, you know, immediately while he was doing his thing on the plinth and so on. But I just had to get a train to get home. There was over 800 people at this, what I thought was going to be a small event. Verona Murphy launching 10 council candidates. So I did a Rosa Tralee style interview thing with them. It was grand. Michael McDowell was actually at it, did a keynote speech. And there was about 800 at it. I was shocked. Like, and Michael said that he hadn't got a feeling like this since 1985 when the Beatles were. So what I'm really saying to you is this. That,
sorry, a feeling of what? A new political movement?
Oh, absolutely. And I knew these people, like me.
Are these people you would have expected previously at Fine Gael events?
And would have voted for me. And voted, but
and
I saw
sorry, people, and just as you said, Verona Murphy was at one stage a Fine Gael candidate. Drummed out in controversy. Yeah. And of course, everyone forgets it, but Michael McDowell was originally a Fine Gael man before he went to the PDs.
So, but I say this as an aside, that leaving aside the whole argument we've had about under 35s going to vote Sinn Féin, there is over 55s that will never vote Sinn Féin that are going to disaffect. I saw ex-Fianna Fáil, ex-Fine Gael people, and independent has this thing, well, I'm not really being disloyal and so on. But the point I'm making is this, the existential crisis facing Fine Gael has not gone away. And therefore, absolutely right in terms of Leo was not an electoral asset at this stage.
He was a liability.
He was
Leo the liability.
He was.
But then, how did that happen? Because if you think back to the way that he was made the leader of the party in 2017, and when after a long sustained campaign of trying to undermine Enda Kenny finally proved to be successful, and you could argue, you know, maybe we look back at Enda Kenny differently now in retrospect, that maybe he had many more achievements than he was given credit for at the time and had made fewer mistakes. But maybe his time had run. He had done as much as he could at that particular stage and Fine Gael needed a fresh face. I'm fascinated by the circumstances in which Leo Varadkar was picked at the time. That because of the weighting that you have in the Fine Gael membership, 65% of the leadership vote comes from the parliamentary party, 25% comes from the party membership,
10%
and 10% from the councillors. And the parliamentary party stitched it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, effectively, Varadkar ran a very, very strong campaign. People like Owen Murphy in particular got out front, got the various commitments from people like Pascal Donoghue to back him, and Simon Coveney was stymied. But what was really interesting was that they still had to go through the whole sort of maybe Potemkin election, and they went and had to do their hustings with the party members. And Coveney comprehensively thrashed Leo Varadkar at that, which made us think at the time, and certainly more so in retrospect, did the party membership have a better understanding and grasp of what would appeal to voters than the parliamentary party, which believed Leo Varadkar's face on posters would deliver him votes, did?
So that is all, you know, that and €2 in insomnia will get you a cup of coffee. And so far as that, you know, so what? The fact of the matter is the parliamentary party, we never even got to the grassroots this time. The parliamentary party make the decision ostensibly because, in all Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, simply because their butt is on the line. And they have to reflect. The organisation might be quite unrepresentative. The Tory party, you know, membership is unrepresentative.
Liz Truss would be an example
exactly.
Of that.
So I actually make no apology for that. So just let's look.
I'm not asking you a question about whether that's appropriate or not. I'm asking you whether there was a misjudgment by the parliamentary party. And the reason I ask it is, and we will get to this later, is that might they have made the same mistake again with Simon Harris in rushing to anoint rather than having a proper contest?
Well, time will tell. But let's just look at what is Leo's legacy? And I'm actually reflecting here on one of the things. When he went to Brussels this weekend for the council meeting, something like when he started, which is only 7 years ago, which is not an eon, and basically there's only three prime ministers left once Leo's gone and so on. And I actually think we need to take a little bit of a step back in terms of what's happening here. Why are people so angry, so upset in a context of full employment, fiscal surplus and all that? And I actually think the impact of the three black swans that he had to deal with. And I think his greatest achievement is Brexit. I think Brexit...
Not COVID management, the pandemic management. Because a lot of people say that his speech that he made to send the nation home to cocoon was, in some respects, his finest hour.
Yeah,
because
Churchill
got people to actually go along with him on that.
Put it like this. Look at what... So they voted for Brexit in 2016. It was only between then and 2020 that it looked like a hard Brexit, not in the single market, not in the customs union. The imperiling of the Irish Sea trade, 40% of our total trade inward and outward, our nearest neighbour, our land bridge for all haulage, all of this, and the question of reimposing the border, which a lot of people, DUP included, hadn't thought through. So my point is this. Actually, if you look at the outcome, a small little country, 1% of the EU population on the most westerly point, and they weren't abandoned by Europe, that they actually got Europe foursquare, Barnier and all that.
Yeah, but hang on. How much of that was necessarily down to Varadkar? I mean, there was a lot of people involved in that. I mean, again, people will maybe disagree, but a lot of people will say Simon Coveney was a highly effective
minister and the civil servants as well.
And the civil servants I was about to get. And indeed, Pascal Donoghue, that Pascal Donoghue's role, and even at that stage moving into the Eurogroup, I was maybe a little bit before that, but he had established excellent relationships in Europe as well. So Varadkar was part of a team in that. But there was one misstep, which I think a lot of people, I don't think, ever really criticised him enough for. Do you remember his meeting with Boris Johnson in the Wirral outside Liverpool, and they agreed a deal that effectively Johnson reneged upon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was obvious to anyone who was paying attention at the time that Johnson was playing him, that Johnson was lying to him, was making an agreement that he was going to renege upon. And I actually thought at the time there was a degree of naivety on Leo Varadkar's part to agree to what Johnson was looking for.
I wouldn't disagree with that, but what I'm trying to say is that the first point I want to make is I think that was so on his watch. Because circumstances, you can have all the policies and manifestos, but what happens when you're in government and these things happen? The second two things, I don't think we've fully factored into the legacy of COVID and the legacy of Ukraine. The legacy of Ukraine is not only 100,000 immigrants, right? 2 million people fleeing war, but also the tripling of energy prices. And that has impacted and put a sour taste in the electorate's mouth in Ireland, UK and across the world. And I actually think we haven't absorbed just how, like, it cost the Exchequer COVID 40 million. How many other businesses never really recovered? How many ways of life never really went back to where they were? And I actually think whoever had been in government at this time with those three black swan events, Brexit, COVID, and Ukraine, was actually heading for unpopularity.
Okay, but then also could it be that other issues that perhaps might have disappointed Fine Gael voters was the perception that he had given in too much to the Green Party agenda, particularly Fine Gael around the country wants more roads built. That actually wasn't happening. That's another type of thing. And there's a feeling that he wasn't adhering to the things that they really want to do. And he became almost like a commentator in chief at times.
Well, he never connected with rural Ireland,
but hold on,
really,
even just
and farmers.
All Ireland, right?
Yeah.
And when I say commentator in chief, because immigration is one of those issues, the first time there was a burning out of tents at the International Protection Centre down near Mount Street was May last year. And he sort of was there going on, God, yeah, it's terrible. If only we'd enough Gardaí to actually go and police it. And you go, hold on a second. You've been in power since 2011 in government. If there's a shortage of the numbers of Gardaí that you're bemoaning, that's your fault because you've been in government since 2011. So don't be sort of throwing your hands up in the air like, what can we do? Well, you've been in government at that stage for 12 years. You can't go around acting as if it's all somebody else's issue. No,
so on the plus side for Leo, he kept the relationship with the tripartite coalition together. He treated Micheál with respect. We've never done rotating Taoiseach before. He managed that. I think with Leo, I think his intellect is without doubt. I think his courage, his ability to be abrasive when he needed to be. I think going back a bit, marriage equality, he was
central to that.
And secondly,
and sorry, more so than Enda Kenny, who was the Taoiseach at the time, but the people who probably drove that would have been, I know the Labour Party would say they drove it and got absolutely no electoral benefit from it, but the people who drove it were more Leo Varadkar and Simon Copley.
And Gilmore deserves enormous credit.
Well, that's why I say the Labour Party.
He forced the issue.
And Micheál Martin, in fairness, actually pitched in enormously in relation to
that. For me, the
highlight
of his entire political career was in relation to Maurice McCabe. When, you know, absolutely the entire system was urinating, defecating on McCabe, he said it was distinguished, you know, what he had done. And I thought that was leadership and that was courageous, because he was basically saying to the incumbent Minister for Justice and Cabinet, I disagree with you. Now, and I actually lost some of that. But the
Sorry, he did that as a minister, but then as a Taoiseach. See, there's another one he did as a minister that he backed off on. And I think this is the thing that perhaps he didn't show the courage of his convictions at time. For example, when he was in charge of social welfare, he said, welfare cheats cheat us all. And because there was an uproar about that, this is dreadful, you can't be targeting particular people, he backed off.
So, but he's always been a lightning rod for the left.
Okay, so he backed off in relation to that. And the other one that I think is a real sticking point, which I think disappointed people, and particularly when you see the way that the economy recovered from 2011, that people feel that they haven't got their fair share of it. That the
taxpayers,
right? Because you get things like the USC has remained, this emergency tax. Remember, Fine Gael went to the general election in 2016 and campaigned for the abolition of the USC. Everybody remembers the ill-fated slogan, keep the recovery going, which ironically was exactly what was required and what effectively has happened. But leave that aside. They promised the abolition of the USC and didn't deliver. It's only been tinkered with along the way. And again, because there was a left-wing reaction to his desire to look after those who got up early in the morning and went out to work.
Which is a great phrase.
He didn't deliver on it. He raised,
with 2.6 million people at work, it was a good phrase.
Exactly.
You know?
So why did he not actually push on?
Yeah.
And actually, if he really believed in it, push on. And he also raised the hair on a 30% tax rate, an interim tax rate between going from 20% to 40%. For those middle-income earners, the people who get up early in the morning and who feel that everything is given to those who are not working as hard as them, rightly or wrongly, but that's their perception. And there is significant voting rump. And they may be the people that you met as well at the Verona-Murphy issue. And he again failed to deliver. Sure, that was even shot down by Pascal Donoghue and the Department of Finance officials before he even got to the other parties.
The other thing I would say is he's 45. And I have said to you, like his second stint as Taoiseach, he struck me as he was auditioning. I've said this to you on this podcast, auditioning for another job. I think his future is very bright. I think it's outside of Ireland. And I think it is in the public realm of WHO, UN, EU or something like that.
Or in the private sector. He could do a Nick Clegg. He might get as Nick Clegg, of course, the former British Deputy Prime Minister, who is now very key to Meta, Facebook. I'm not sure Leo Varadkar is going to get a position as prominent as that. And indeed, he may have undermined his ability to get his senior corporate position in the United States because of his strong support of Gaza. Mm-hmm. There is a very strong pro-Israeli lobby in big business, particularly Silicon Valley in the United States, which might make him persona non grata.
Can I use the rugby analogy? So you can imagine Conor Murray at scrum half, right? And there's a ruck and eventually he gets the ball out and he does this high looping pass to the number 10. And there's three wing forwards and another out half descending on him just as he catches the ball and he's flattened. That is the immediate legacy of Leo, that he has pandered on such a hospital pass to Simon Harris
is it not better that he has done that rather than remaining at the helm, almost like a semi-interested spectator at times, rather than the commander-in-chief?
Well, the best analogy, do you remember that boat that ran aground and the first person off it was the captain?
The cruise liner.
That's what it's like.
The Concordia.
That's so instead of saying, everyone keep calm. This plane of Fine Gael, having towed 76 seats, is going to crash in the next general election. Take my word for it. It is going to crash.
But it might not crash with as many casualties now.
Well, the point about it is this. The captain getting out early is an act of very selfish thing. Because, I'm actually looking at my next career here. My gardening leave will be served here.
Do you know there was one line in his speech that he gave outside government buildings, which really I thought, wow. He said, I've had a great time. I got to meet loads of people and go loads of places that I wouldn't otherwise have done. And I'm going, hang on a second. You were the Taoiseach. I mean, like, you know, like, geez, didn't I have a great... It's like the time that, you know, remember he went to 10 Downing Street. And I mean, it was a bit embarrassing. Yeah. He had this capacity for very gauche moments.
Was it from Love Actually?
Love Actually, the scene where Hugh Grant dances down
the
stairs.
Well, I don't mind that human side of things. Yeah.
Hang on, that happened the day after the Grenfell tragedy. You know, there was a certain degree of decorum actually perhaps required. He had this capacity that at times maybe when you're on the rise as a young minister is sort of likeable and relatable. But when you become Taoiseach, and actually I'll tell you another one that I was aware of last year that really and really annoyed a lot of Fine Gael voters was what happened with himself and his partner Matt Barrett went to King Charles's coronation. And the Matt Barrett then started in a WhatsApp group, but a WhatsApp group, I think, of about 350 people, sort of Graham Norton style, sort of
taking the piss
commentary of the coronation and all the rest of it and stuff, which if you're a private citizen is absolutely fine. And everyone could say, well, Matt Barrett is a private citizen, except he wasn't. The only reason he was at the coronation was he was there as the partner of our Taoiseach. So a certain amount of decorum was required. And at that time, I know Leo Varadkar came out and apologised, and I think Matt Barrett did as well, and said, look, there wouldn't be anything like that happening again. But I think that was, again, a signal for a lot of people in Fine Gael that, you know, hang on, this isn't quite what we expect out of our leadership.
So my net point is, whether you're a fan of Leo's or an opponent of Leo's, the manner of the tail end of his departure takes from whatever positive legacy that you want to put on.
It doesn't matter. And that's what I'm trying to say to you.
It does when we go on to the next thing, which is Harris.
Okay, well, will we go to Simon Harris now? Will we sort of dispense with the past and move to the future? Well,
people are fed up with Leo already. And it's only Friday.
The opinion polls were saying they were fed up with him before he resigned, which is one of the reasons why he resigned.
They're fed up talking about him now. They want to talk about the new meat on the barbie.
But isn't that always the way it is?
Oh, absolutely.
How quickly things move on.
Yeah,
but hold on. And I want to go back, and I sort of hinted at this earlier. I mean, did Fine Gael need a contest for the leadership for all sorts of reasons?
Oh, I find this so tiresome when people say that. That's said by people in the media.
I didn't even hear what I was going to say.
Bush scutter from so many people. Look, but this is a business politics. This requires hundreds of thousands of votes. It requires a lot of apparatchiks. It requires candidates. This is not something, we need to have a navel-gazing spectacle to find out the soul of Fine Gael. No, we don't. They need to campaign for votes rapidly, and because we're in the timing of
they
this.
They need to find out who can appeal to the electorate, right? And is there not a serious danger that what they've done is they've gone in exactly the same manner as the way that Leo Varadkar orchestrated his coup to become the leader, that Simon Harris has organised himself brilliantly, moved very quickly, and what Fine Gael is getting is Leo Varadkar, Mark II. Maybe a better version.
First of all, if we were in opposition, if Fine Gael were in opposition, that would be absolutely valid. Soul searching, democracy, and all. They're in bleeding government. This is the Taoiseach of the country. There's a country to be run here. This is not a time for an esoteric contest. So, first of all,
two weeks in the run up to Easter, Easter was all it would have taken.
So,
two weeks.
Let's talk about Harris. So, Harris.
Hold on. Are you trying to tell me that there was nobody else who could have actually served as leader of Fine Gael?
That's the way this works.
I know that's the way this works. But then you have to ask, why is it that they wouldn't have got the votes?
And I'll tell you why.
Because, before you get to that, instead of jumping, look at the other possible contenders. Now, I don't think Helen McEntee was ever a real contender, right? And also, I think what really did for her was that in his time as acting Minister for Justice during her maternity leave, Simon Harris exuded far more authority in the position than she did. So that immediately gave him a massive advantage over her. And even leaving aside the Dublin riots.
But I said to you when we went through this in December, she was a busted flush.
Okay, so let's say it. So it wasn't going to be Helen McEntee of the younger brigade. You could say there were two from the older brigade, Simon Coveney and Pascal Donoghue, right?
I've been saying to you, Simon Coveney won't be in the next all. How's he going to lead Fine Gael?
I agree for other reasons. Yeah. I agree with that. And I suspect that Simon Coveney will end up being another one who'll end up with a very, very good job either in the public sector in Europe or the private sector. Because for apparently very highly regarded, particularly by foreign investors coming into the country, and his job in foreign affairs. I suspect Pascal Donoghue had mentally checked out, probably disappointment and not getting the IMF job, but he will seize plenty of potential in getting other jobs.
And when he left Unilever to go into politics, they were very, very, they put him in a graduate program. Like, he is very employable in the private sector, leaving aside the Euro job. But
And I just want to finish on Pascal. The one thing I will say about Pascal Donoghue, I think he is very committed.
God's hope in hell.
Can I finish my point?
No, he was blamed for the 2020 election. And you know what's actually happened is, so backbencher from Clare or from Sligo says, can I meet you, Pascal? This is either in finance or in deeper public expenditure department. I have this project and they're looking for 6 million. And he's been saying no for 7 years. And then you think he's going to actually get votes. No, he's not.
But I don't think he wanted it, because I think what he probably is now is quite happy the idea. We'll get to the timing of the next general election later. But his term as the president of the Eurogroup runs until July next year. So if
25.
So if you look at the timing of all of this, right? If the government goes to March 25 or the election's March 25, government changes in October 25, but it could take a couple of months for a new coalition to be formed. It means he gets to serve a full term in the Eurogroup, and that sets him up perfectly for whatever his next job is going to be. However, that would possibly require him to run for the next election.
I have to say something.
Because I wonder if he will run the next election.
Put it like this. You are very friendly with Pascal Donoghue. I respect Pascal Donoghue.
I'm not friendly. You know, you do. Sorry, I don't actually have friends in politics.
Let me finish the sentence.
But you've made an incorrect assumption.
No, sorry. You know him fairly well through the book stuff and all that kind of thing. And he's a regular on the show and he's good at it and all that. Someone sat me down about 6 weeks ago and said, I said, what's the story about Pascal? You know, in the event of a new... He said, well, the way I'd sum up Pascal is fake friends. And a very cruel thing to say. And it's not something I wouldn't consider myself that close to Pascal, so I don't know. But that is the perception of him. Like you, when I said, oh, you're a friend. Oh, no, he's not.
That's the same relationship. Ivan, can I say, I don't have a single political friend.
Okay.
I genuinely don't.
I have loads of political friends across all
Harris? Unless it's been for one of my podcast interviews, there has never been a politician in my house.
You fake it.
Right, okay.
First of all, I'm saying none of the other candidates were credible. And I said there is no betting when the vacancy arrives who the next leader who will be Simon Harris. Yeah. I'm on the record about. So let me tell you about Simon Harris. And I want to... So someone rang me from the betting community who lives in Greystones in 2009. He said, Ivan, you should take an interest in this young Harris fella. He got some extraordinary vote in the Greystones local election area for Wicklow County Council, something like 3,000 votes. It was absolutely bizarre. I said, okay, point taken. This wasn't a political person. And he was fanatical about him, in support of him. Next thing he came out, I knew he'd sail into the Dáil because there was a landslide, you know, 76 seats. And I said to myself, well, now, a bit like me, you're the youngest TD. And everyone would say to you, bide your time, you're 21, serve your apprenticeship and kind of just wait around. And there was between Labour and Fine Gael.
He was 24 coming in,
But there was something like 50 backbenchers all looking for preferment. Like, the majority was so big that there was going to be a lot of disgruntlement.
And immediately he managed to get to the front and that he was given the task of nominating Enda Kenny for Taoiseach.
Yeah, which is just a titular thing. But
I know, it got him noticed.
The second time I had a sharp intake of breath and said, wow, was in 2014. So there was a redraw of the European constituencies, and the South constituency took in the southeastern counties, not in Munster, of Wicklow, Wexford, Carlow, Kilkenny. And so Fine Gael had to run a candidate there that hadn't a hope of getting elected, to run as a sweeper role to get preferences to secure two seats. And you know what? He steps up and he's the candidate. And he had no more interest in going to Europe than I have, right? And so the next thing was, after the first reshuffle, I think he did a deal with Enda Kenny and he became the most senior junior minister in OPW. And I said, well, that's smart politics. You've pole vaulted every other hapless backbencher to get into. And from then on, he actually came into the public eyes.
And so, he got his first ministry in 2016.
Okay, so everyone has their view on COVID. I actually think he's less damaged by COVID than nearly everybody else. If you look at the UK and so on. So Anyone who thinks this is Leo Mark II does not know who they're talking about in seminars. Let me explain. This guy, I know you decry me, so sometimes I get the dart out of here and I wait for the Wexford train and I go into the Hibernian pub in Bray on the seafront. And Stephen, the manager, said to me, he said, you were talking about this and that. And I said, yeah, Harris will be the next leader. And he said, you know, he said, my father had pub as well. And Bart, his father, worked for me as a bartender, worked for the family firm for 30 years. And he's a bartender. And now he's driving a taxi. And I said, hold on a second. And this guy's going to be party leader. So then I dug deeper. And so he didn't go to King's Hoss. He didn't go to TCD. He actually went to DIT in a journalism course, dropped out to become an assistant to Francis Fitzgerald in the Dáil. You know, quite low grade, you know, a drone, a worker bee. So basically...
What's your point?
My point is this. Any comparison with him, if Leo walked into this room... There'd actually be, even though he doesn't intend it, there'd be an awkwardness. He's very timid. He doesn't have people skills. Simon Harris has the best social and political and people skills I have ever seen in anyone.
Well, sorry, he reminds me of Enda Kenny in some respects like this. I mean, for the one thing, Enda Kenny had an incredible ability to actually to walk into a room and get on with everyone.
But Enda's father was a TD. He was reared to it. Simon had no political background whatsoever.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the first Taoiseach who has no political family background. Bertie Ahern's father was a gardener.
Absolutely.
Up in the day.
He's like Bertie.
No, he's not, actually. Bertie was more like Leo Varadkar in some respects in his personal interactions. Bertie Ahern, for non-political people, would go around and he would shake hands with everybody. How's the hard-working man? And he'd have a little glib phrase and he'd move on. Bertie Ahern was not particularly good.
My relationship with Bertie, he'd just speak out of the side of his mouth and he'd tell you, you know what I really think about this?
Yeah, but hold on.
And he'd have some cutting remark about and let you into his inner thoughts.
Yeah, he would with politicians. He would with politicians. Okay. But he wasn't actually, even that famous 1997 general election victory, which you spoke about on the podcast last week. I mean, he may have met about half the country in his whistle-stop tour, but he actually spoke to nobody. He just kept shaking hands. How's the hard work, man? Are you going well? Blah, blah. And kept going and kept going. And that was the way Bertie Ahern was with all but his closest friends and with political people. But I agree with you entirely. Leo Varadkar, despite, you know, the fact that the parliamentary party thought put his face on the posters and everybody would like him and that they would want to
his
vote
people
for him.
Skills were lacking.
His people
skills,
I mean, I think he was naturally shy.
Oh, absolutely. And this, it wasn't that he was a horrible person. It was just he found himself awkward. Now,
I want to hear loads more about Harris. But I agree with you. I mean, Simon Harris reminds me more of Enda Kenny in that regard.
Okay. Well, put it like this. The second is a brilliant communicator. But like he did his first interview on 6-1 last night. I don't know if you saw it. And he did tell a whopper in terms of credibility. He said he was an accidental politician. At 15 years of age, with no political background, his and I'm sure you know his brother Adam.
I do. Adam's a very impressive guy.
Oh, stop.
Enormously impressive.
He set up As I Am, this autistic
is the autism group.
And
so...
Basically, Simon and Adam are very close and they campaigned together to improve local services for autism. And that was his first touch to be involved. So I see huge potential for him to connect with disability, the recent referendum and carers and all of that in a very authentic way. He's done it before, during and after.
He has to deliver, sorry, because remember in 2017, he told parents of children with scoliosis that they wouldn't have to wait more than 4 months for surgery.
So this is why all political careers end in tears, because you govern in prose and you can't deliver on these things. Yeah. So that's what happened. But so Adam is the second thing.
But sorry, I don't doubt his sincerity in wanting to deal with to provide for carers and for those.
But
who
no,
need
his track record is there. Is my point, and Adam will reinforce that. Next up, so he has the people skills. He has the common touch. He's very articulate. Now I'm not carrying any candles for him. And actually, can I just say, by the way, I think this means that Francis Fitzgerald will be the presidential candidate for Fine Gael
in 25.
Given the closeness, and she was first out of the thing. So he did not go to TCD. He did not go to King's Hoss. He cannot be put down as Leo Mark II.
He suffers from Crohn's disease. He's not elitist, you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just not, it's just not him. Secondly, he suffers from Crohn's disease, which, and that is why he's so thin and so on. And he always looks, you know, his grey hair.
He looks older than his years.
Oh, totally.
And perhaps acts a bit older than his
absolutely.
Years as well.
So, and he has a safe seat. So all of these things together. Now, hold on a minute. So he has a little bit of the potential JFK thing, I think. But let's...
Maybe exaggerating a bit, isn't it?
What did I say earlier? He's like the number 10. He is going to be flattened because the problem is not Leo or their face on the poster. The problem is Fine Gael in power 14 years and they are done. They're living on exhaust fumes and they're going to be kicked out of office unmercifully. Therefore, this is analogous to 2011. When Micheál Martin took over the party, Fianna Fáil went on a month later to get 19 seats as well. Was Micheál blamed? So I'm still sticking to the scenario. The asset of Simon Harris is not what he's going to do in the next year's Taoiseach. It's actually what he's going to do to reinvent and rejuvenate the party over a decade, I think. And actually, I don't think this timing was of his choosing, although some people are now saying that Leo saw the men in the grey suits coming to him. And I don't know if that's true or not. But the truth of it is, 18 months ago, he was on manoeuvres to get Leo out and Leo saw it off.
Well, sorry, that's right. I think I wrote a piece about May last year because I was hearing very strong rumblings that there were people who wanted to move before the summer recess, that they felt that Leo was completely low energy and was going to be a disaster for them.
And Pascal and Simon saw them off. Yeah. This Simon Coveney.
But things did not improve over the following year. But you see, this is the point, you think that maybe he can mitigate the damage and loss for Fine Gael.
There is no expectation of that, really. He might get some more candidates and so on, and he will do the TikTok. He will be a TikTok Taoiseach and all that good stuff in terms of connecting. But look, the truth of it is, the visceral nature, and you see this on the toxic social media all the time, the Fine Gael out, anti-establishment, Jesus, if he was leading Fine Gael, couldn't change that.
Okay, but could it be that he might persuade some of those intending to retire to change their mind?
I went through that, and I was trying to, Brendan Griffin is the only one I could think of. Because Brendan Griffin had a spat in relation to not being promoted in the last reshuffle, and it basically said, I'm off. And he might change his mind. In fact, if he was offered a junior ministry, I think he might stay.
Okay, well, actually, who do you think will get the minister? I'm going to suggest to you that the only things he can do is relation to replace Leo Varadkar at cabinet. One other is that Simon Coveney
is gone.
Yeah, I would think that would be an obvious one.
Yeah.
I think he'll keep Pascal Donoghue on. You don't think
no,
so?
No, well,
but I'll tell you why I think he'll keep Pascal Donoghue.
The presidency of the Eurogroup will mean. So the reasons why he can't touch Pascal, but this is what shocked me in the last 24 hours. The people who said to me, you do know that Pascal and Simon hate each other. And I said, what? He said, whatever it is, they just do not get on. It's one of the few relationships that is not good in the party. So then I was thinking, okay, fast forward how that'll work out. And I've told you that I don't think Pascal wanted to stand in the next election. He has career and he doesn't have a safe seat. But the situation is this. Even if he wanted to, and I think he does want to, he won't sack him. A, because of what you said, the Eurogroup. And secondly, the joined at the hip tightness of this government is actually the relationship between Pascal and Michael McGrath. And therefore, and you know the way they've swapped over finance and deeper and all that kind of thing.
And Fianna Fáil and the Greens, they can live with changing maybe the Fine Gael leader, but they mightn't.
So for those reasons, I think, but I don't know.
Did
you read Pascal's statement? So, you know, the focus, Heather had withdrawn, everyone had withdrawn, and he didn't even mention. At this stage, it was clear who was going to win next day. He didn't even mention Harris by name at that stage. Now, he's since done a bit of an interview to retrieve that position. But the truth of it is, I don't know what happened, whether it was some money he was looking for and he didn't get it from Pascal. But the truth, and of course, they will all deny this. And no, they'll be airbrushed. But take it from me, these two do not get on.
Okay. Funny enough, when Pascal Donoghue does an annual books event each year for us on The Last Word with Lise Hand, they review the non-fiction books of the year. And one of the books I put to him last year, Rory Stewart's book, and the former British government minister, Tory. And he was actually quite scathing about Rory Stewart. And I was surprised and asked him why. And he said it was because Rory Stewart had walked off the political stage. So there's a thing about Pascal Donoghue, maybe we're preempting his departure perhaps a little bit too much, that he has this belief.
I'm saying this is a rock in the road. I don't know how it's going to be resolved, but this is not something...
But I suspect that Pascal Donoghue, in the difference, he's done it for long enough in relation... So who are we going to throw? Jennifer Carol McNeil to the...
Steady on. Well, first of all...
Because the rumour was she was seriously considering pitching for the leadership.
No, sorry. She was actually the only one who was prepared to actually take him on. but she didn't have the numbers. And therefore, she was actually going to commit. Because I think Harris is ruthless. And I think you have to be ruthless to get to the top job. But can I just make...
So will she be made a government minister?
I put it like this. I would say, in terms of reshuffle, I'd say Helen McEntee is going to be swapping perhaps with someone like Peter Burke, you know, the European affairs role. I think she's going to be a super junior. I think she's going to be moved.
Would she accept move from a senior government position to a junior super junior?
What are her options? That or walk off the pitch with your toys? No, I don't think so. So the second thing is that so Simon is gone, Leo's gone, Pascal's on borrowed time.
He survived for the rest of this government, and from what you're saying, they won't be in government next time round. Anyway.
So Heather. So he has to appoint a deputy leader who's female, and I think Heather is probably moved at the right time in the right way, and probably would do that. And I think she'll go into justice. I think
is she strong enough to be the justice?
Well,
minister?
I think that might suit if that she wouldn't do too well in it. And so you know, so now
sorry, so hang on now.
Hold on.
Is it not very important to Fine Gael that there's to get a control on justice between now and the next election, because there's health is in the hands of Stephen Donnelly and Fianna Fáil, and we all know how difficult it is to make any significant progress in health. The housing portfolio is in the hands of Dara O'Brien and Fianna Fáil, and you know this. Although the start numbers are up, and you could see by the end of the year the biggest number of new houses and apartments built since the crash.
I don't see the party portfolios changing.
They won't. So Fine Gael won't be able to take much credit. So the only thing that two issues that I can see where Fine Gael can do things that might be of electoral benefit to them are in policing, which means justice. Mm. And the other thing is in dealing with immigration.
Okay. So who's going to be on the way up?
Yeah.
Write it down. Guaranteed. Future star of the party and going to be a national figure in Irish politics.
I bet you're going to say Neil Richmond.
No, Peter Burke.
Peter Burke. Okay.
Peter Burke is the closest. He was first out of the traps and organised the whole choreography of TDs and senators and all that. And they were working on that for a while.
So he gets the senior ministry.
The other person in that cabal is Neil Richmond. You're absolutely right. The situation is... Simon has to sort out rural Ireland problem. Has to, like, there is a huge, Leo absolutely lost rural Ireland, and which is very strong for Fine Gael. And Enda Kenny would have been very strong for that, Mayo and all the rest of it. So at the end of the day, those are two people. And you know, sometimes you don't get the big jump up on day one of a new leader, but those are the people, like in the same way that you had Leo, Simon Coveney and Pascal Donoghue, the three people that will be closest to Simon will be those two.
Okay, and I can see how they could be your two choices, but I'd suggest, and I'm not campaigning for anyone, believe me, like, so I'm just sort of saying, I'm just looking at it. Okay, but particularly if he was to do what you've suggested and move Helen McEntee to a super junior role.
Which is certainly going out of justice.
Okay, but if she got demoted, I suspect of the two appointments he makes, he'll have to be one man, one woman. And that's why I think Jennifer Carroll McNeill might be elevated.
Well, put it like this. They used to say about someone, PJ Mara, you'd know better than me, called her blonde ambition.
Emily O'Reilly.
Yeah, Emily O'Reilly. Jennifer is blonde ambition. That's what she is.
And what's wrong with that? Would you say that about a man?
Sorry, it's an absolute prerequisite for my type of politician.
So that is not a condemnation. Those are words of praise. That is actually
the highest commendation, that you're a ruthless.
Good, I'm glad
you stab your mother to get promotion.
I'm glad you're clarifying that.
That wasn't some sort of sexist comment. Your best friend is just your connection to your next promotion. So, I mean, all of that.
But okay,
She has the moxie to actually have a row with her. So you know, every leader, if you lose an election and don't go into government, you have to automatically. Yeah. I'd say she'll make her presence felt at some stage.
Okay, but I don't think it'll be immediately after the next election, because Simon Harris, unless he's a disaster in the role of Taoiseach, I can't imagine Fine Gael would want to get rid of him after the next election. But we're going a little bit on compared to our normal week. By the way, if you do want to get in touch, if you're listening and if you're enjoying this and if you want to offer your opinion or put in questions that we promise we will try to get to next week, we weren't able to do it for this week. The email address is mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com, and we'll try to get to those next week. Couple of things before we wrap up. How do you reckon the Greens and Fianna Fáil will get on with Simon Harris as leader? Because, you know, you've got two experienced, I nearly said elderly, but they're not quite elderly, but you've experienced politicians in Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan, and the next thing, they're faced with this much younger man. I mean, he is more than a generation younger than Micheál Martin.
Yeah, I know, and this is his first challenge. He has got to immediately develop a solid, genuine, credible respect for those two people and say, look, I will not cause an election, call an election as Taoiseach without your support. We'll have a discussion of when the optimum time is, and I still think it's October, November.
All right, well, I want to come back to that in a minute.
But sorry, I think that's his first test. If he fails that, because let's be quite honest, Fianna Fáil have been very honourable about this. They have not looked at this opportunistically. They've said, look, you know, there, but for the grace of God, it could be Fianna Fáil succession or whatever. And they have absolutely behaved properly. I think it's really important. And you see, this is the big cleft stick. This is why he won't make any progress. Don't expect him to go up to 25%. Don't expect them not to lose two MEPs, simply because he cannot develop a distinctive, strident new Fine Gael while keeping the government together. He is actually handcuffed in this. And that is why the timing is so bad from Leo's perspective, because, you know, if it was in a post-election situation, then he could rebuild the party. He can't rebuild the party right
now. Let me give
right
you another scenario. Could it be possible that he doesn't get to become Taoiseach at all? In that, the independent...
What are you smoking these days?
No, I'm actually... You see, I'm trying to pose there. You always see, you make the mistake at times of not realising that a question is not an opinion, that a question is designed to actually to get you to respond without resorting to cheap jibes like that. So the question that I'm putting to you is, could the independents decide that this is a good time for them to have a general election? Because Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens do not have the number to have him automatically elected as Taoiseach. They have to get a certain... Remember, they only had a few votes in hand when Helen McEntee won the vote of no confidence. So what if there's a lot of cute independents who are thinking, do you know what, here now, this could be a great opportunity to actually strike while the iron's hot, general election.
What did I say earlier? Noel Grealish, Verona Murphy and all these independents actually have, like Michael Lowry, about 6 to 10 councillors, but wannabes. They're in the middle of fighting that election very locally. They are not going to want to drop that ball. So it suits everybody. It suits Sinn Féin. It suits everybody. Look, all this nonsense, oh, let's have a general election. Nobody wants an election until the local elections are over.
What do you make of all this stuff from the opposition, from Sinn Féin, from Holly Kearns and Democratic Left? Ivana Bacic was at it as well from Labour. That this is a disgrace.
Soap opera politics, that's what it is. Well, they don't actually believe it.
Yeah.
They want an election of maximum opportunity for them. They believe that is post-local elections. And also you're going to have the problem that there's going to be by-elections precipitated by the Euro elections, and they have to be held within 6 months, all of which I don't think will be held. And that's why I'm sticking to the October-November election and the fact that the incumbent government going in a January-February election is just not a good idea.
Okay, well, I was planning to finish that, and so I want to tease that out a little bit more, because my travel plans for the end of October and start of November.
You're thinking November, USA, here we go.
Exactly. I'm thinking, I want to bring the last five out to New York. I want to be out covering the US election, which I won't be able to do if there's a general election taking place in Ireland.
I'd say that won't stop you. Go on, yeah.
Anyway, the point is, I actually very much believe that it is likely to be the last week in October, first week in November for a general election. For the reasons we've discussed previously, they can bring a budget out in September, and if they put some goodies in there, again, they reckon it can mitigate the losses that they are facing. And better to go then, they would see it, than going in February, March, when the weather's foul and when the hospitals have had all the waiting lists and all the rest of it. All the usual reasons why February hasn't worked in the last
couple of seasonality.
Pure seasonality. However, I just wonder, two things come into play here. That if Fianna Fáil and the Greens make it an absolute condition of supporting Harris, that
which they might
to,
do, which they might do. You see, that's the issue of the timing of the election. He can't do a solo run. That amounts to the same thing.
And the second thing is that, and this comes down to the thing, but all politicians have egos and they love power. So once Simon Harris gets his feet under the desk in the Department of the Taoiseach, and he starts to like it, and he starts thinking, well, I've only got so long in here, and I know I'm going to be back in the opposition benches as soon as the general election is held, isn't the temptation going to be, well, you know, get another 4 or 5 months.
And
out
also,
of it.
He wouldn't like it on his CV, the shortest ever. You know, absolutely. A bit like Liz Truss. So I think that that is a factor. But like, let's be clear. Leo Varadkar has unilaterally plunged the entire body politic, the government and everything, into a complete unknowable series
Isn't
of things.
Isn't that great for us? Isn't this great?
No. So I care a little bit about the country. For God's sake, this is not a theatre. This is a grown-up.
Are you saying you're actually the serious one and I'm actually the one who actually loves the entertainment value out of it all? Remember, show business for ugly people,
Sorry, I accept all of that. But there are careers at stake here and so on, and that this is a serious business.
You know, one of Leo Varadkar's advisors, I'm told, after he gave his speech outside government buildings, went home sick for the rest of the day.
But that's not unreasonable or unusual. Like, that would have happened, say, you know, Mark Kennelly, who was very close to Enda Kenny, has to reinvent himself. Roy Dooney with John Bruton. I would have seen that it's more than a professional working relationship. It's actually such an emotional commitment. It's the busiest part of your life, a journey. So, I mean, all of that. But at the end of the day, what I'm saying is that he's given a hospital pass to Harris. It's not going to work out well in the short term, but in the long term, he could actually make quite an impact.
That's it for today. That is our latest Path to Power. Sorry, we've gone on a little bit longer than we usually do, but we had a few things to talk about. A few things we didn't get to talk about that hopefully we will next week.
So you told me
we
were going to talk about assisted dying, and now we ended up talking about Fine Gael.
Well, we actually got to politically assisted dying. Okay, until the next time, from me, Matt Cooper.
And from me, Ivan.
Thank you very much for listening to us. And please, please recommend us to a friend. Or maybe even recommend us to somebody you don't like. But we're just trying to build the numbers here to make people aware of Path to Power. Until the next time.